What I will do, of course, is say, turn with me, if you will, to the place where we're going to begin this week, the continuing story of the Exodus. Started last week with the Shemot Torah portion that begins the book, of course, and we are almost to the place where we're going to see the beginning of the 10 plagues, but at the end of last week's Torah portion, by the way, turn with me, if you will, to chapter 6. We're going to start in the second verse, not the same as the first. Second verse, and it is the place where Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, and he said the famous words that literally are the backbone of the story, Ani Yahuwah. And then this week's portion, that was actually the end of last week, because it's a single verse, it's kind of split, and it says, Vayera, and I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, as El Shaddai. In other words, that was the name by which they knew me. It isn't, and by the way, if you look and read Genesis, you'll see, we talk about this, he is referred to as Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh in there. But the key here, he says, but by my name, Yahuwah, I have not made myself known to them. What does that mean? What it really means is, he is going to demonstrate what that name really means, and that is the key to the whole story. So they knew the name, but they did not understand the implications, the importance of what it is that he is now fixing to make clear. And he says this, and I've also established my covenant with them. Well, we know that. That's the famous covenant that we continue to recognize. To give them the land of Canaan, the land of their sojournings, wherein they sojourned. And moreover, he says, I have heard the groaning of the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, whom the people of Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, keep in bondage. And I have, now this word is really important, zakar. That means to bring to remembrance, not to forget, but more like make it front and center. I have remembered, that root word again, zakar, my covenant, briti. So therefore, he says, say unto the B'nai Israel, Ani Yahuwah. And here is one of the more important verses in the portion, and indeed it's often known as the four I wills, and we'll see it kind of referenced in other places in Scripture. So here we go. Sarah, therefore, say to them, Ani Yahuwah, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments, and I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you an Elohim, and you shall know that, here it is again, Ki Ani Yahuwah, your Elohim, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land, and I will, concerning which I lifted up my hand to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for a heritage. And one more time, he signs the verse, Ani Yahuwah. And then it says, Moshe spoke unto the children of Israel, but they didn't hearken, they didn't shema, they did not obey, for impatience of spirit and for cruel bondage. So they had other things on their mind, and they just plain weren't paying attention. So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, go in, speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moshe spoke before Yahuwah, and he said, look, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened to me. How am I going to then get Pharaoh to hear me? I who am of uncircumcised lips. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe and unto Aaron, and he gave them a charge unto the children of Israel and unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. And now we're going to get this interesting aside. It's not like we haven't heard some of the genealogy, but remember, there's been over 200 years since the children of Israel went down into Egypt and into the place where they sojourned there, the heart of the land, Goshen. It says this, these are the heads of their father's houses. The sons of Reuben, firstborn of Israel, Hanach, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben. Sons of Simeon, Yemuel, and Yamin, and Ohad, and Yachin, and Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman. These are the families of Simeon. So we're going to get them in order. These are the names of the sons of Levi. Now, a bit more detail. According to their generations, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. So those three. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. Now we're told elsewhere, Levi was the last of the 12 sons to pass. The sons of Gershon, Libni and Shimei, according to their families. The sons of Kohath, Amram, Ichar, and Hebron, and Uziel. And the years of the life of Kohath, just one of those, the sons of ultimately Levi, were 133 years. Sons of Merari, Mahli, and Mushi. These are the families of the Levites according to their generations. All right, now we're not done with the Levites, obviously, because we're going to get some more detail. This will make sense when we see exactly what we're talking about. Amram, it says, that's one of the sons there of Kohath, took a woman named Jochebed, his father's sister, so this was his aunt, to be a wife. She bore him Aaron and Moshe. And the life of the years of Amram were 137 years, same as Levi. Sons of Itzar were Korah, Nepheg, and Zichri. The sons of Uziel, Mishael, Elzaphan, and Sithri. Now, Aaron, it says, took him a wife, Elisheba, the daughter of Amminadab, son, the sister of Nachshon, to wife. She bore him, we know these sons, we're going to hear them a number of times, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And the notes in the margin essentially say what we're going to see here is that the sons of Aaron, they do seem to carry some of Nachshon's traits. They're bold, but maybe a bit impetuous as well. The sons of Korah, Asher and Elkanah and Abisaph, these are the families of the Korahites. And Eleazar's Eleazar, that would be the eldest son of Aaron, he took to him as a wife one of the daughters of Putiel. She bore him a fella. This name is going to recur again. Pinhas or Phinehas. These are the heads of the fathers of the houses of the Levites, according to their families. These are they that Aaron and Moshe, to whom Yahuwah said, bring out the B'nai Israel from the land of Egypt according to their hosts. These are the ones, these are they that spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring out the children of Israel and from Egypt. These are the same, Aaron and Moshe. Moshe and Aaron, actually. It came to pass on the day when Yahuwah spoke to Moshe in the land of Mitzrayim, that Yahuwah spoke unto him, and he said, Ani Yahuwah. You speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I tell you, all that I speak to you. And then Moshe said before Yahuwah, behold, this is the second time he said this in just the last half chapter, I am of uncircumcised lips. How is it that Pharaoh will hearken to me? So Yahuwah said to Moshe, look, I have set you in the place of Elohim unto Pharaoh. In other words, you are my spokesman. I have put you in my place to do this. And Aaron, your brother, he will be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron, your brother, shall speak unto Pharaoh, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And, he says, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the lands of Egypt, in the land of Egypt. Now, let me pause here. We're going to get to some detail on this idea of hardening the heart. And I always try to make this point because I think it's very important. You just plain don't see it in the English renderings of the Bible. And that's sad. Sometimes the translations will do a halfway decent job in an occasional place. But the bottom line is, harden his heart is two separate words in Hebrew. And in English, if they're both hardened, you don't get the idea that the Bible is making a very clear distinction, and they're important. Okay, so I'm going to do that to him, is what he says, though. But Pharaoh ain't going to hearken. He will not listen to you. He will not hear and obey, for crying out loud. And I will lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth my hosts, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And what else? The Egyptians shall know, Ki Ani Yahuwah. When I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt, and bring out the children of Israel from among them. So Moshe and Aaron did so, as Yahuwah commanded them, so they did. And it says here, Moshe was 80 years old. So remember, his life is essentially divided into three parts by the 40-year increments. First 40 in Egypt, second 40 tending sheep, and the third 40 are going to begin right about here. Okay, so he is now 80 as we begin this part of the saga. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. So the question is, what's the distinction between the two hardens? And we're going to hear them in some detail. So we'll get to that momentarily. And it'll be clear as we go through the actual text here. But it's coming up real soon. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said, when Pharaoh speaks to you, and he says, show me a wonder, so that you will then say unto Aaron, take your rod, cast it down before Pharaoh, that it might become a serpent. This one is not the word Nakash, by the way. So Moshe and Aaron did. They went into Pharaoh. They did so as you had commanded. Aaron threw down his rod. He cast it down before Pharaoh, before his servants, and it became a kanin. That's the second time this word is used. There's a couple different words that are used for snake or serpent or whatever, but this is a tanin here. Then Pharaoh, he called for his so-called wise men, his sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, came out. They did just the same thing. They did it in like manner with their own secret arts. Each one of them, they cast down his rod. They all became tanin, taninim, plural, and Aaron's rod swallowed theirs up. Pharaoh's heart, though, it says, was hardened. Now, let's make it clear here. This word is the same word that we recognize when we hear kazakh. Be strong and of good courage, right? So, kazakh, that's the root word here, at least. Chatzakh is to be strong. So, what was the real better translation? Pharaoh's heart was strong. It was strengthened. And he didn't listen to him, as Yahuwah had already told him was going to happen. So, Yahuwah said to Moshe, Pharaoh's heart is, now he uses a different word, stubborn, not hard, not strengthened, not strong, stubborn. That word in Hebrew is kabod. So, kabod. He made his heart kabod. This is Yahuwah now explaining that is the state. That is what his heart really is. He refuses to let the people go. So already he knows the situation, obviously. Get yourself unto Pharaoh in the morning. Lo, he goes out to the water, and you're going to stand there by the brink of the river to meet him. And the rod which was turned into a tanin, and in this case he says nachash, interestingly, you take it by the hand, in your hand. And then you say unto him, to Pharaoh, Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, has sent me unto you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. And behold, up till now, you have not hearkened. You have not heard. You haven't obeyed. So thus says Yahuwah, in this you shall know. And here it is again. Ki ini Yahuwah. Behold, I will smite with that rod that's in my hand upon the waters which are in the river, and they shall be turned into blood. And the fish that are in the river, they'll die. And the river will become foul, and the Egyptians will be loath to drink that bloody water from the river. So Yahuwah said to Moshe, say to Aaron, take your rod, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, over their streams, over their pools, over their ponds of water, that they might become blood. And there will be blood throughout the land, all of it, of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. So even if somebody's got some water that isn't connected, it's going to go bad too. Moshe and Aaron did so. As you were commanded, he lifted up the rod, he smote the waters in the river in the sight of Pharaoh, so he saw it, and in the sight of all of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. And the fish that were in the river died. The river became foul. Egyptians couldn't drink it, the water from the river, and the blood was throughout all the land of Egypt. The magicians of Egypt did the same thing with their secret arts. Isn't that wonderful? We don't have enough bloody water. Let's see if we can't pollute some more. They did. Pharaoh's heart was, what? Strengthened. Chazak. It was strong. And he didn't hearken, just as Yahuwah had already said was going to be the case. So Pharaoh turned and he went into his house, nor did he even lay this to heart. So he isn't listening yet. The Egyptians, they digged all over the place, around about the river, see if they could find some water to drink, but they couldn't. They couldn't drink any of the water of the river. And it says 7 days were fulfilled. So they got 7 days of tough times with bloody water, after which Yahuwah had smitten the river. And then it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, go on into Pharaoh, and say unto him, thus says Yahuwah, let my people go, that they might serve me. And if you refuse to let them go, you know what I'm going to do? Behold, I will smite all your borders with zephardim, frogs. And a river will swim with frogs. They'll come up into your house, into your bedchamber, on your bed. They'll be in the house of your servants, on your people. They'll get into your ovens, into your kneading troughs. There'll be frogs, frogs, frogs everywhere. And the frogs are going to come upon you and upon your people and upon all your servants. Sounds delightful, right? Frogs till you can't stand frogs. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, say unto Aaron, stretch forth your hand with your rod over the rivers, canals, pools, and cause frogs to come upon the land of Egypt. So, Sepharvaim city. Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt. The frogs came up, and they covered the land. The magicians did in like manner with their secret arts. Don't have enough frogs yet. Hey, let's have some more. Sure enough, they brought some frogs upon the land of Egypt. Just what you wanted, right? So Pharaoh then, but, you know, the point here is anything you can do, we can do too. Turns out that's not going to work for long. Pharaoh called for Moshe and Aaron, and he said, okay, ask Yahuwah, entreat him, and tell him to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and then I'll let the people go, that they might sacrifice unto Yahuwah. Say, hey, sounds like he's caved, right? Don't be so fast. Moshe says to Pharaoh, have thou this glory over me. In other words, he's going to ask him a question. Here you go. What time would you like me to entreat for you and for your servants and your people that the frogs be destroyed from you and the houses and remain only where they belong, in the river? When would you like that to happen? And interestingly, the point that Rashi makes, now Rashi, remember, is kind of the penultimate Hebrew scholar, and he notes that normally it would be a different prefix or way of saying this, but in this case, they use the lamed, the L, the la sound. And so basically, it's against what time? And the response, how about tomorrow? Now, got to ask the question, right? There's a song, I couldn't find it. I was going to play One More Night with the Frogs, because it's kind of a silly thing, isn't it? You ask the question, hey, please, pray to your God for me. Ask you who will get rid of these frogs. Well, what time would you like that to happen? Well, not right away. Why wouldn't he say right away? So this is the thought process here. And essentially, the idea is Pharaoh thinks that he's going to try to outsmart Moshe. Frogs are fixing to go away. Moshe knows it. There's something natural going on here. So I'm going to fox him. I'm going to say, not right away. That way, if the frogs go away too soon, I'll say, ha-ha, gotcha. How about tomorrow morning? Moshe's not fazed. He says, you want it tomorrow? All right, you got it. Against tomorrow. Be it according to your word. Now, those are famous, not quite last words, but prophetic utterances that are going to come back to bug Pharaoh time and again. You want them tonight? Nope. No. You can have them tomorrow morning. Be it according to your word. You may know that there is no one like unto Yahuwah, our Elohim. The frogs, though, come tomorrow, they will depart from you. From your houses, your servants, the people, they'll remain only in the river. So Moshe and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moshe cried unto Yahuwah concerning the frogs, which he'd brought upon Pharaoh. And Yahuwah did, according to the word of Moshe. And the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courts, out of the fields. And they gathered together those dead frogs in heaps, and the land stank. Next morning, though. So when Pharaoh saw that there was no respite, he did what? Now this time, it says in English, he hardened his heart. Uh-uh. The last couple of times, he has made his heart strong. That's not what's happening here. He did the kibbod thing. He stubbornized his heart. And he did not hearken to them as Yahuwah had already told them was going to happen. Yahuwah said to Moshe, say to Aaron, stretch out your rod, smite the dust of the earth, that it might become kin, lice, gnats, little tiny no-see-em kind of bugs, lots and lots of kin, kinim is plural, throughout all the land of Egypt. Okay, so here is the third plague, if we're counting. We had the bloody river, the Nile, now we had the frogs, and now we get the gnats, the lice from the dust. There are going to be a lot of these little no-see-em kind of bugs. They did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod. He smote the dust of the earth, and there were gnats, there were kinim upon man, upon beast, upon everything. All the dust of the earth became gnats throughout all the land of Egypt. The magicians tried to do it, it says. They did so with their secret arts. Let's get some more gnats. We don't have enough yet. Nope, they tried to bring forth gnats. They failed. They couldn't do it. And there were still, plenty of gnats. Gnats upon man and upon beast. Now, the reason why this is important, and I see the question, you know, could they make a distinction between Yah's frogs and the fake frogs from the magicians? do they look different? I suspect the answer is hard to tell. The magicians probably tried to make the frogs as much like the other ones as they could, because otherwise they would have failed. They're not the same. We could make the exact same frogs. But the point is, somebody was watching, I guess, to see that they managed to make some more. All right, same thing with the gnats. They tried, but in this case, they couldn't do it. Then the magicians, finally, they get it. So this is a key development, okay? Third plague, suddenly one major change. The magicians said, this, Pharaoh, this is the finger of Elohim. There's something going on here we can't match. Pharaoh's heart, though, was strengthened now. Kazakh. And he did not hearken to them, again, as Yahuwah had spoken. So, Yahuwah says to Moshe, rise up, when? Early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh, and when he comes forth through the water, and you say to him, thus says Yahuwah, let my people go, that they might serve me. Otherwise, if you're not going to let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies, ha, arov. So, in some cases, the word is translated just as swarms. Swarms of some kind of gnarly insect. Presumably bigger than the other ones, but this is going to be lots and lots of swarms of these things. Flies, probably. And the houses of the Egyptians will be full of these swarms of flies. And same thing with the ground. They'll be everywhere. But, here is the key. Now, one of the things that I will note, and sometimes I'll spend more time talking about the distinctions than others, but there are lots of ways that these plagues have repeating patterns in them. For example, where is Pharaoh? Sometimes he's in his house, sometimes he's at the river. So public and private is one of the distinctions. There are almost like three sets of three here in terms of these plagues. The public plagues, the private plagues, the first set that the magicians are able to match, and then the third, at the end of the third plague, they can't do it anymore. And that's going to be the case from here on out. And we're going to see this thing now with the flies. Furthermore, says Yahuwah, I will set apart. So it's heap liti. Sever. Make a distinction. I'll set apart, sever, the land of Goshen in which my people dwell. So there won't be any swarms of flies up there. To the end that you may know, what? Oh yeah, ki ani Yahuwah in the midst of the earth. Now he's going to emphasize this. And I will put a division, a distinction. And this word is pedut. Show that there is a difference between my people and the people of the land, the other Egyptians. And guess when, right? If you can say tomorrow, that's when it's going to be. So Yahuwah did so. There came grievous swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh, his servants' houses, and in all the land of Egypt. The land was literally ruined by reason of the swarms of flies. Now it says, this time, Pharaoh calls out from Moshe and Aaron, and he says, go and sacrifice to your God in the land. And Moshe says, you know what? It's not meet to do so. For shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to Yahuwah our El? Because, you know, if we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, won't they try to stone us? We'll go 3 days' journey in the wilderness and then sacrifice to Yahuwah our El as he shall command us. Pharaoh says, okay, I'll let you go, that you might sacrifice to Yahuwah your El Bamidbar in the wilderness. Only, just don't go too far away. Entreat for me. Moshe says, behold, I go out from you, and I will entreat Yahuwah that the swarms of flies might depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people, tomorrow. Just don't let Pharaoh deal deceitfully with us anymore. Right? You've been lying to us. You say you will, then you won't. Anymore in not letting the people go to sacrifice to Yahuwah. So Moshe went out from Pharaoh, and he entreated Yahuwah, and Yahuwah did, according to the word of Moshe. He removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, his servants, his people. Not one fly remained. And guess what happened? Oh yeah, we know the answer, right? And Pharaoh stubbornized. He made kabod his heart. So the word there, again, root word, he stubbornized his heart. This is a bit different, and I think we see the distinction. One thing to say he's stout-hearted, strong-hearted. It's another thing to say, no, he's just plain stubborn. He made his heart stubborn. This time also, he did not let the people go. So this is kind of inexcusable. He's gone back on his word. He's made his heart stubborn. Now, Yahuwah says to Moshe, go in unto Pharaoh and tell him, thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, let my people go that they might serve me. Because if you refuse to let them go, and still you hold on to them, behold, the hand of Yahuwah is upon your cattle, which are in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, the camels, the herds, the flocks. There will be a very grievous moraine. And Yahuwah will continue. From here on out, we're going to see this division. Make a division, between the cattle, even, of Israel and the cattle of Egypt. And there will be nothing die of anything that belongs to the B'nai Israel. Not so much for the Egyptians. They're going to lose a lot of livestock. But the Hebrews, nope. Yahuwah appointed a set time. Guess when? He said, tomorrow Yahuwah is going to do this thing in the land. And Yahuwah did that thing in the morning. And all the cattle of Egypt died. But the cattle of the children of Israel, not one of them died. Pharaoh sent, in other words, he's checking it out. Is this really true? And behold, there was not so much as one of the cattle of the Israelites that was dead. But the heart of Pharaoh was, want to guess? Stubborn. Kabod. He didn't let the people go. Then Yahuwah says to Moshe and unto Aaron, take yourself handfuls of soot from the furnace, and let Moses throw it towards the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And this shall become small dust over all the land of Egypt, and it will end up with boils. It'll make boils break forth upon and blains upon man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. So they took some soot from the furnace. They stood before Pharaoh. Moses threw it up towards the heavens, and it became boils, breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast. Now, this time it says the magicians couldn't even stand before Moshe because of the boils. And the boils were upon the magicians and upon all of the Egyptians. So the magicians at this point, I've heard this is kind of like hemorrhoids. We're not going to be able to do much of anything. And now it says, notice, here's a big change. And now, for the first time, it says, Yahuwah did what? English? He hardened. No, what did he really do? He strengthened. Pharaoh was fixing to cave. And Yahuwah, finally, now strengthens his heart. He made it kazak. And he hearkened not to them, as Yahuwah had spoken unto Moshe. So Pharaoh was going to cave otherwise. This time it's Yahuwah. And the old story, in for a penny, in for a pound, the way I've heard it explained, I always thought this was kind of humorous. You might decide to dance with the bear, okay? But the bear decides when the dance is over. And that's exactly what Pharaoh is seeing. You have made your bed, you're going to lie in it. And he's going all the way down to the count. Now, he's not getting off this ride until it's finished. Yahuwah then said unto Moshe, get up early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh, and say to him, thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they might serve me. For this time, I'm going to send all my plagues upon your heart. The lev is the heart there. And upon your servants, he's talking to Pharaoh, remember, and upon your people. You may know, therefore, that there is no one, none like me in all the earth. Surely now, I had put forth my hand and smitten you and your people with pestilence, and you had been cut off from the earth. But in very deed for this cause have I made you to stand, to show you my power. In other words, you know, it would have been over by now if it hadn't been for me kind of bucking you up a bit. To show you my power, that my name, Shemi, right? What name? Ani Yahuwah. That my name might be declared throughout all of the earth. Bekol Haaretz, throughout, Bekol, all of Haaretz, the earth. Now, still you exalt yourself against my people, that you won't let them go. Why is that? Behold, want to know when? Yeah, tomorrow, about this same time, I'm going to cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as not been seen in Egypt since the day it was founded, not up until now. You want to see hail? You are going to see some hail. So now, therefore, send Bring in your cattle, anything that you have in the field. You better get it inside. For every man and beast that is out in the field when this unleashes, and it isn't brought inside, brought home, the hail will come down upon them, and it'll kill them. They shall die. So, interesting. Remember there used to be a brokerage commercial? My brokerage, whoever it was, and he says, and then the room would get quiet. Okay, the point was, oh, when Moses speaks, people listen. When E.F. Hutton, that was it. I don't even know if E.F. Hutton still exists. When E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. Well, what has happened at this point is, when Moses speaks, people that are paying attention listen. He has established credibility. So what it says is, the people, and it sounds like there were a lot of Egyptians, we're going to find out, this is part of the reason why so many leave with the mixed multitude. He that feared the word of Yahuwah among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his cattle come inside. They got them into the houses. Those that weren't paying attention, that did not regard the word of Yahuwah, well, they left their servants and their cattle out in the field. And you can guess what happened. So Yahuwah said unto Moshe, stretch forth your hand towards the heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast and upon every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moshe stretched forth his rod towards heaven, and Yahuwah sent thunder and hail, fire, and it all ran down under the earth, and Yahuwah caused hail upon the land of Egypt. Now, there is an interesting aside here, and it has to do with some of the teachings that are essentially associated with, but not explicitly stated in Scripture. And I think this is important to point out, because essentially one of the things that is true about each of these plagues is that they are a judgment. They are a desecration, if you will, of one or another specific god, so-called god, Elohim, mighty ones, of the Egyptians. Right? You think you got all these gods. I'm going to show you a real god, Ki Ani Yahuwah. Now, what's fascinating about this one is you have this plague that is fire and hail. Now, these are essentially said to be two gods of the Egyptians. But these are gods that they never show up at the same time, because fire melts hail, or hail puts out fire, right? So here is a great irony. You want to see some dueling gods coming down from the heavens? Oh, yeah, got to bring them both on you at the same time. How's that for putting the fake gods to the test? Moses stretched forth his hand, and you got hail and thunder and fire all coming down upon the earth. So there was hail and fire flashing up amidst the hail, very grievous, such as had not been seen in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Dueling gods. The hail then smote throughout all the land of Egypt, anything that was outside in the field, both man and beast. The hail smote every herb of the field, and it broke every tree out in the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, you know it, no hail. He made that distinction. So Pharaoh sent, he called for Moshe and Aaron, he said to them, oh man, oh, have I blown it, right? I have sinned this time. Yahuwah is righteous, and me and my people, we are wicked. He gets it. So, he says, entreat Yahuwah, and we've had enough. Let there be enough of these mighty thunderings and hail. I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. Well, there you go. Sounds like things are right, okay? Moshe said to him, as soon as I'm gone out of the city, I'll spread forth my hands unto Yahuwah. The thunder shall cease. There won't be any more hail, so that you may know that the earth is Yahuwah's. Now, as for you and your servants, I got a pretty strong suspicion, he says. Matter of fact, I know that you will not yet fear Yahuwah Elohim. Now, it then tells us one other interesting thing. Now, this is important because this is going to be a timing indication for what we're going to see in the last plague, obviously. The flax and the barley were smitten because the barley was in the ear. In other words, the barley is what the Hebrews would call abib. It had reached a state of development where it was about ready to come out. The flax, though, was in bloom. So the wheat and the spelt were not smitten because they ripen later on. But as for the barley and the flax, it's too late. They were far enough along. They were destroyed. So Moshe, it says, went out of the city from Pharaoh. He spread forth his hands to Yahuwah, and the thunders and the hail ceased, and the rain was not poured upon the earth. When Pharaoh saw the rain and the hail and the thunders were ceased, Guess what he did? Oh, yeah. He sinned yet more. This time, he made kabod, he stubbornized his own heart and the heart of his servants, he and his servants. So they all got stubborn. And then it says, and the heart of Pharaoh was kazak. So we got now a kind of a dueling hardness is here. He's both stubborn and he's still strengthening his own heart. So he didn't let the children of Israel go, again, as Yahuwah had spoken by Moshe. And with that, we are almost to the end of the plagues. We got a couple more to go, and we've also reached the end of the Torah portion. So essentially what we're going to see is these are the start and the major portion of the plagues, and the next Torah portion is where we're going to see, I guess you'd say, the climax of all of this, at least this part of this.